Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it, the Daily Caller Podcast for the 20th day of February, 2019. Oh, February just goes by so quickly. Only 28 days. When you're making the months up, why don't you throw February another day or two? You know, you got a couple of months with 31 days. They don't need them. They're just showing off. Make February 30 days. Make it whole. But no, only every 4 years does it get close to that 30-day mark. And then we rip it back from it. Anyway, I'm Derek Hunter. I appreciate you listening. Thank you for telling a friend. Please continue to do that. Share on social media. Encourage everybody you know and their brother, mother, sister, and father? Yeah, I think I left them off. Everybody you know to listen. We welcome all comers. Even if you don't, if you're not a conservative, welcome. You should at least get a chuckle out of it. And maybe, maybe, just maybe, it'll make you think and open your mind. You can email the show, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. And so many of you did yesterday. I appreciate the hell out of that. I've got a whole bunch of emails I have yet to read. Yesterday was not a good day in Snot Town here at the Hunter home as the two babies, one 19 months old, I guess. I don't know. I never learned to count. And one 4.5 months old and me all have a cold. I'm doing better than they are, I think, even though my voice doesn't sound like it. And I will get stuffed up the longer I speak today. But at least I know what's going on. And I can drink NyQuil, which is God's elixir. They can't. They just get the older one gets infant Tylenol. They both get snot sucked out of their nose, and the entire upstairs where the bedrooms are just is a vaporized, I don't know, sweat lodge. It's just, it's so humid upstairs. It smells like vapor, but they're able to sleep, so that's good. I'm hoping that we've turned a corner. So I'll keep you updated on the snot update for February 2019. That's what you tuned in for, isn't it? Anyway, there is a lot of stuff to get to, and I appreciate all the emails you guys gave me. That's what I was saying. See, it's NyQuil. I requested some TV shows. I want trashy shows. I want something that is mindless and stupid, not something like I watched all of Breaking Bad several times. Not like Breaking Bad. I want something I don't have to think about. Trashy reality show, something, anything that I can just turn my mind off and ignore on the TV for the one day a week that I don't work, which is Saturday, unless I didn't finish my column Friday night and then I work Saturday, but very briefly. Judging by the subject lines and just the previews that I've read of some of your emails, like I said, I haven't even had time to read them. You've got some great suggestions, some interesting suggestions. Just keep in mind, I like my good TV shows. I have my DVR set for those. But I also like to have something in the mix. I used to have like several hundred DVDs. I collected DVDs. I had DVDs, three of them, before I even had a DVD player. I couldn't afford the DVD player, but I wanted to have the movies. And I had a second section of about 30 DVDs that were just god-awful, terrible movies. Really, really bad movies. Crossroads starring Britney Spears. Spice World, which I went and saw in the theater. Me and my friend Jeff got really, really high, and we walked out of it because it was so bad. And what's another example? From Justin to Kelly. Remember the first season of American Idol? They actually made a movie out of that. It was terrible. But it was hilarious to watch. It was just so bad. You sit around with friends, and after a few adult beverages, you turn into Mystery Science Theater 3000. You turn that sucker on. It's a great time. That's the kind of TV show I'm looking for. Something that's just so bad, it makes you hate life, but you can't turn it off. Like Love After Lockup, or, Below Deck. I actually like the show. It's a reality show about a luxury yacht crew. My goal in life, one of them, is to make enough money where I can charter a yacht and possibly, preferably, be on the show Below Deck and watch 3 days of my life be condensed into 2 hours and be humiliated, but just watch it live and up close. Anyway, there is so much to get to. I've rambled on for far too long, and we have a big show today because the Democratic field for president has increased yet again. George Bernard Shaw Sanders. No, that's not really his name. Bernie Sanders, Bernard Sanders, as he was born, has thrown his hat into the ring. And the 77-year-old socialist senator from Vermont has decided that he should be our next president. Didn't we hear this song already in 2016? Well, this time he's back with a vengeance, and this time it's personal. Bernie 2, Bernie Harder. It is, it's the same old song and dance. It's the same old ridiculousness. But the difference is, whereas in 2016, Bernie Sanders was kind of an anomaly. Hillary Clinton, believe it or not, was the more moderate of the Democrats running for president in 2016. If you remember the field, there was Senator Jim Webb for about 22 seconds. There was the former Rhode Island Senator Lincoln Chafee for less than 20 seconds. And the former mayor and mayor of Baltimore, governor of Maryland, Martin O'Malley, who, God, he loved himself. But unfortunately, he could only vote for himself once. That meant he only had one vote. He was immediately dropped as well. It was just no oxygen in the room for anybody but Hillary, except Bernie brought his own oxygen. He captured the radical left, and he personally changed. Barack Obama gets a lot of credit for changing the Democratic Party because he sort of put the collectivism, the mindset of collectivism, the pseudo-soft socialism, into acceptable terms. He always sounded so nice when he was being completely vicious. But Bernie, after Obama, really tore that mask off, tore the curtain off between semi-moderate Democrats and radical leftists. And it's amazing how the radical leftists had all the gravity because they've sucked the entire party to the far left. Now, where Bernie was sort of a novelty and unique in 2016, he's just one in a crowd. He's just another guy. In fact, it's worse for him because the monster that he and his fellow travelers helped create sort of kneecapped Bernie out of the starting gate. Because Bernie, by existing, is committing one of the worst sins you can create in liberal land. Bernie is a white man. Bernie is a straight white man. And that's a problem now in the Democratic Party, where it's just a few years ago, he was, everybody loved him. He was running against a woman, but it didn't matter that he was a white man because he was a socialist and his politics trumped his identity. Now it doesn't work that way anymore. It is, geez, he's a kind of a white guy where we should really be nominating a person of color or a woman or a transgender or you know, get the trifecta, a transgender person of color who identifies as a woman. Who cares what they started out as? So in many ways, Bernie Sanders' 2020 campaign is a victim of the success of Bernie Sanders' 2016 campaign. It couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Now, don't take my word for it. Bernie Sanders himself, in an interview with CBS, if you can call it an interview, this was not an interview, it was a kind of a gross makeout session, the quality of questioning that Democrats face, he admitted that he's not dragged the party to the left. The party came running to the left because they saw all the energy that he created in 2016.
But all of your opponents will say, we've got to get Donald Trump out of the White House. That's not your distinguishing characteristic. So
that is not my distinguishing characteristic. I think what I am very proud of, and in a sense, this campaign, John, is a continuation of what we did in 2016. You will recall, you may recall, that in 2016, many of the ideas that I talked about, Medicare for all, raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, making public colleges and universities tuition free, All of those ideas, people say, oh, Bernie, they're so radical. They are extreme. The American people just won't accept those ideas. Well, you know what's happened over 3 years? All of those ideas and many more are now part of the political mainstream.
So you're saying the party came your way?
Well, I don't want to say that. I think most people would say that.
I just did, as a matter of fact. But Bernie is going to suffer because Bernie is just really, at the end of the day, a crazy white guy when you look at the rest of the field. The rest of the field is going to be filled with people who are equally as crazy as Bernie Sanders, if not crazier, if that's possible. I suspect somewhere in his inner monologue, he'll never vocalize it, but somewhere in his head when he's going to be on that debate stage with 15, 20 other Democrats, in the back of his head, he's going to be going, these people are freaking nuts. What in the hell is wrong with these people? These plans will never work. But he's got to keep quiet about it because it's kind of the monster that he helped create. So now he's just a white guy up on stage with a bunch of women and people of color. And he's going to lose. I think he's really going to lose. He thinks he's got a better shot this year, and he doesn't. Because of what he helped create. And also, well, actually, amongst real Americans, amongst the actual voters, not Democratic primary voters, there was an interesting discovery that could hurt Bernie in a general election that came out. An interview he gave in 1985 when he was the mayor of Burlington, Vermont, just a run-of-the-mill socialist before he decided to probably follow the advice and orders of his handlers from Moscow to infiltrate higher. They realized that cornering the market on the maple syrup capital of the world was not the way to destroy the great Satan that is the United States. They needed him in Congress. And then they collapsed. So Bernie's kind of been a guy without a country ever since. But in this interview, he said, I think it's with some local cable access things, because honestly, who the hell cares what the mayor of Burlington, Vermont thinks? It's some local horrible audio kind of video. You can find the whole video. It's like 25 minutes long out there on the interwebs, as they call it. But there were a couple of interesting tidbits of information that came out in this that would hurt Bernie in a general election, but may well help him in the Democratic primary, because Democrats are really kind of insane people who are not big fans of this country. The first clip we have is Bernie Sanders talking about bread lines. Now, you would think this would not be a controversial topic. There aren't too many people out there. You know, a quick search on Amazon won't turn up a whole bunch of books in defense of bread lines and why bread lines are good. But it turns out that Bernie Sanders, back in 1985, thought that bread lines were pretty good. They were actually a sign of how well a country is doing, that people are starving to death and waiting in line for their slice of government cheese. Think I'm making it up? I am not. Here is the audio.
You know, it's funny. Sometimes American journalists talk about how bad a country is because people are lining up for food. That's a good thing. In other countries, people don't line up for food. The rich get the food and the poor starve to death.
That's a hell of a novel approach to the idea of bread lines there, Bernie. What? They're standing in line, but think of all the calories they're burning standing there in line. What with the slowly shuffling of the feet as they go forward? It's not exactly the most aerobic of exercises, but still, calories are being burnt. You're standing in line. That's a lot of carbs for bread. You got to work that off before you get there. Imagine how many calories you burnt sitting around 6, 7, 8 hours a day waiting for your bread and then going back the next day. You've completely burned off the bread that you got. It's a wonderful thing. Socialism. I've never heard anybody defend bread. I've heard communists deny that there were bread lines before. I've never heard anybody go, yeah, but the bread lines are great. The longer, the better. The longer the lines, the longer the wait. The more that means that people are getting to eat. And remember, in all of these countries with wait times for food, with bread lines, everybody is equal. Society's socialism has brought forth pure equality, the truest form of equality. Actually, the only kind of equality anybody or any country can achieve, quite frankly. everybody suffers equally. It's not a rising tide lifts all boats. It's a receding tide sinks all boats. So let's just get the water out of here and screw over everybody. Then we'll all be equal. Because not everybody can be good. There is no Lake Woebegone. I hate to break it to you. There is no place where everybody's above average. It just doesn't work that way. Human nature and reality, economic reality, doesn't work. But I will remind everybody of something that I always remind everybody of, because I think it's important. The leaders of these utopias throughout history, where socialism has worked its wonders, be it under the names of communism, fascism, or straight-up socialism, doesn't really matter. They are all different sides of the same die. Is that the leaders are always fat. Have you noticed that? Castro had a few extra pounds on him. Nicolas Maduro certainly doesn't look like he's passed up a sandwich buffet very often. Hugo Chavez was big. Kim Jong-un, everybody's equal in North Korea. Kim Jong-un is just more equal. Maybe they're really not starving in North Korea. Maybe Kim Jong-un is just eating all the food. I don't know. Stalin, portly, Mao, he would have shopped in the husky department. His tough skins would have been husky-sized. Yet everybody else was equal. Everybody else was fine, and everybody else was waiting in bread lines, and that was perfectly okay with good old Bernie Sanders. you can't make that up. He wants to defend bread lines. Well, those are a good thing. You know, that means that the rich aren't getting all the food. Really? That's what that means? So Stalin was just getting fat because he breathed different air, high caloric air or something? How do you explain that, Bernie? Well, back in 1985, this little local reporter couldn't be bothered with asking a follow-up question. Like, what the hell are you talking about, crazy person? Because she was right there with him. The questioning was not all that bad. But the main crux of throughout the interview, Bernie goes back to defending communism, socialism, fascism, whatever you want to call it. He proudly was a socialist back then. I believe Bernie Sanders is the only person to be kicked out of a hippie commune for not carrying his own weight, for not pulling his own weight. So that lets you know, when you're absolutely useless in society and you can't even hack it in a hippie commune, go into politics, because you don't need to really do much of anything. Just talk a good game and you too can become a United States Senator and a 2-time Democratic Party candidate for president. Well, throughout the course of this interview, there's just a gold mine of things that would, I think if you watch the whole thing, it's alternately horrifying that a man of such high esteem in one of the two major political parties in this country holds these views. He's not changed his views ever in his whole life. I'm not sure he's capable of it. If anything, he's gone more radical, if they've changed at all. But he started off pretty radical. But it should be horrifying that somebody could attain this level of importance and influence in the Democratic Party, in any party, who believes this crap. Now, again, this interview was from 1985. You have to remember the Cold War was still going on at that time. And it's pretty clear from this interview which side of the Cold War Bernie Sanders actually was rooting for. Here's a hint. It wasn't our side. Listen to this.
You may recall way back in, what was it, 1961, they invaded Cuba. And everybody was totally convinced that Castro was the worst guy in the world, that all the Cuban people were going to rise up in rebellion against Fidel Castro. They had forgotten that he educated their kids, gave them health care, totally transformed the society.
Yes, Cuba was just paradise. It is still just absolute paradise. A mere 90 miles from Florida. Who knew that was where utopia existed? What Bernie doesn't address, and what, of course, sycophants of the Castro brothers never really address, is why would anybody see, who's lucky enough to be born in such a paradise, why would they rip the door off their home, throw it into shark-infested waters, and try to swim to Florida on it? If it's so wonderful, why would people do that, Bernie? Now, most human beings understand that it's probably a bad indicator of how things really are once you get past the Michael Moore caricature of what the utopia that is Cuba is. Once you get past the official government hospital for, you know, government officials and the special people, and you say, well, the healthcare system is just wonderful here, and you see the actual hospitals for the Cuban people that are covered in dried blood, fecal matter, and God knows what else, you can see why somebody might rip the hinges off the door to their house and make a break for the beach, trying to get to Florida. We don't know how many people have died on their way to Florida, trying to escape paradise. But here's a little bit of a pro tip for you. People don't try to escape paradise. They just don't. But Bernie views it as, well, the people love him. He gives them education. He gives them free health care. Well, that's wonderful, Bernie. Why don't you go to Cuba? Why don't you move to Cuba? I mean, if it's so wonderful, why wouldn't you encourage people to move there? Or tell people openly, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to bring here. I want to make the United States Cuba. So wonderful. So wonderful. I think if Bernie were to get the nomination in a general election, he would probably have a little bit of a difficult time winning Florida. Just throwing that out there. More than just his glowing love and slobbery wet kiss to Fidel Castro back in 1985, Bernie also talked about his admiration and love for communists in Nicaragua. I'm not making that up. The Sandinistas are, he just come back. That was sort of the pretext of this interview, as best I could tell, as much as there is a pretext for like a public access show interviewing a small town mayor. But no emails about how big Burlington, Vermont is. In the grand scheme of the entire country, it's the biggest city in Vermont, which is like the tallest midget. So let that go. He has real admiration for the communists down in Nicaragua, and he's not afraid to say it, and he's not afraid to say that he's offering them advice as a U.S. citizen. He despises the U.S. These next couple of clips, you could tell the guy does not like this country, but he loves communism, and he loves the communist dictators down in Nicaragua, so much so that he wants to help them get better PR. I'm not joking.
Did you have suggestions for them how they could organize their PR a little bit more effectively?
I think it's yes. I mean, the point that I try to make to many of the people that I spoke to is they're getting killed in the American media. Mm. They just cannot compete. Reagan and his people are so sophisticated. They own the airwaves, of course. Reagan, the media, every time Reagan gives them a photo opportunity, thousands, thank you, Mr. President. Thank you very much for telling us another lie. You know, the media, of course, is not allowed to ask sharp questions of the president. That's not allowed.
You know, the media isn't allowed to ask tough questions of the president. He was talking about President Reagan. And yes, Ronald Reagan just had a cakewalk with the press. Why, they loved him. And if anybody like Sam Donaldson started screaming and yelling questions at him, why, he was scolded by his fellow journalists saying, no, no, you're not allowed to ask tough questions of Ronald Reagan. It's such a garbage interview. It's such a delusion that this guy lives under. A cloud of delusion. I don't think that his hair was actually white back then. It was just the ash fire from his brain coming out of his ears and landing on his head that made it seem that way. Yeah, I love those communists down there, and I offered them all kinds of advice. He thinks that communism just has a PR problem. It's not the oppression, it's not the death squads, it's not the breadlines. He likes the breadlines. It's that they have a PR problem. They need much better PR. So that was his advice. He wasn't done giving it.
And, you know, my point to Ortega is they are not getting their message of what they are trying to do out to the American people. And there's just no question about that. And they just don't have that kind of sophistication to understand how to manipulate the media as you know, the White House has dozens of people who are trained. They are trained and well-paid people who are professional manipulators of the media. They have their contacts in CBS and NBC and ABC. That's what they're paid to do, and they do it very, very well. You know, Hager is the president of a country of 3 million people. They have probably one television station. They have no sophistication. They have no knowledge as to when you call. You know, they call press conferences that the media can't even use here in the United States because it's the wrong time. You know, there's a whole science around this, which they're not aware of.
There's so much to unpack in this audio. It's ridiculous. They'll probably only have one TV channel. Why would they only have one TV channel, Bernie? Is it because that they're communists and the government controls everything and they only want people to have access to the information they want them to have access to? Might that be why they only have one TV channel, Bernie? Could it be that they're backwoods and didn't really have a lot of electricity? So even if they did have a cable, there wouldn't be anybody to be able to afford it because, again, of communism. But I love the idea that he throws in there at the end. They don't know what they're doing. They have the press conferences and they schedule them for the wrong time and they can't use them here. Like the media is just itching, you know, they're just sitting around going, man, if we could only get a Sandinista press conference live, but it's going to interrupt Ryan's hope and there's no way we're going to take it then. Or what? Does Bernie think that they're in a different, I don't know, on the other side of the planet, on the other half of or the other side of the international dateline? They think it's like Australia where it's a 12-hour difference? I don't know what the wrong time means since videotape existed in 1985. If they were to hold a press conference that was any value whatsoever of news, it would have been available for use by the U.S. media at any time whatsoever, because that's how videotape works. They're in, you know, what, if I had to guess, they're Western or Pacific time zone, maybe Central time or Mountain time zone, the forgotten time zone. It's not like it's Australia where if we don't take this press conference live at 3 a.m. when they're doing it, we're just not going to be able to get it. There's no way to capture this except for maybe a court sketch artist and a transcript. But Bernie has really convinced himself back in 1985 and probably to this day that that was the problem with communism in Nicaragua. It's just bad PR. You know, they just needed a good PR guy. And in fact, Bernie talks about how he helped them try and get a good PR guy so that they could propagandize the United States citizenry against the United States government.
They have contacts now with they've hired a public relations firm in the United States, and they're trying to improve it. But the main point is, I think they have got to very greatly improve their ability to communicate with the average American. And that's what I said.
It's unbelievable. I mean, this video, it's like I said, it's 25 minutes long. It's worth watching because of the earnestness and the conviction with which Bernie speaks about these wonderful communists down in Central America and these awful, awful Americans led by that horrible, horrible Ronald Reagan trying to impose freedom on them when they clearly don't want it. They're wildly popular, these communists, because if you said anything against them, you'd end up on the business end of a military rifle and shot and killed and never heard from again. It buried out in the middle of the jungle. Yeah, that doesn't occur to me. Look, you can't make utopia without piling up a few hundred million dead. That's just science. But it wasn't just Bernie. Yes, Bernie was the newest one in the ring yesterday, but the field of crazy over there, it continues. The crazy train just rolls. And don't worry, I'm not going to play crazy train. But I do have an update on Elizabeth Warren, so I am going to play this.
Hell free! That's all I ever heard.
Yes, Pocahontas herself, Elizabeth Warren. It's got to be tough to be a Democrat in the field out there, trying to put out proposals that out-crazy the other people. They're always trying to out-woke the other person. That's why they all jump on the Jussie Smollett case. Like, oh, this sounds to me like an attempted modern-day lynching. He did it to himself? Well, I don't want to pass any judgment. I'm going to wait and see the results of the investigation. Well, when they're coming out with their policy proposals, it's free this, free that, everybody's got to have this. They're all going to call for free everything for everybody, and they're going to achieve this by making the rich pay their fair share, which is garbage. The rich already pay way more than anybody else. But in the rush to be first, since that's really the only way they're going to be able to differentiate themselves from the stage, that and identity politics, I imagine their debate is going to be something along the lines of, yes, I agree with my other colleagues up here on everything. Everything should be free, but I would like to point out that I am a woman. Or I would like to point out that I am a person of color and a woman, and I'm questioning my sexuality from time to time. Therefore, I'm gender fluid. It's that kind of garbage. That's really the only debate it's going to be. It's like opening up your sock drawer, and you've got white tube socks or white tube socks. Which one are you going to go with? I don't know. There's no difference. Well, what are you going to judge it on? The stitching? The most irrelevant thing possible having to do with a sock? That's going to be where the Democratic Party lives. They're going to be picking their candidate on the most irrelevant thing any human being can offer. Their skin color, their gender, which bathroom they use. So they all have to sort of plant their flags in things to try and make it their issue so they can say, well, I did that first. Because they're all going to do the same thing. They're all going to have a plan for free college. They're all going to have a plan for free health care for everybody. And Elizabeth Warren came out with a plan for first. They'll all have their own plan. Free universal child care. Yes, the government wants. It's not enough that the government gets its claws into your kids from kindergarten through 12th grade. They got to get to them early, you see, because at the end of that indoctrination process, there are still some people who are conservative. They didn't get to them early enough, or they didn't have them long enough to sort of counteract their parents' influence, and the sweet appeal, the siren song, if you will, of liberty. And they want to squash that. They need to squash that. So in a post on Medium, which seems to be where all Democrats run these days to float their ridiculous ideas, she posted a post entitled, "My Plan for Universal Child Care." And since she's a Democrat, and it really is a woke-off, she had to recount her sad tale of woe as to why she wants to create a free universal child care program. So here is Elizabeth Warren, just a few paragraphs of Elizabeth Warren's sad tale of woe, set to the appropriate music. I remember how hard it was to find affordable and high-quality child care when I was a working mom with two little ones. I had a job teaching at a law school in Houston when the babysitter quit. The Houston bar where she wrote that she was Native American or an American Indian. Over the next few months, I tried all sorts of child care options. Another babysitter, a neighbor with kids, and a couple of daycare centers. One day I picked up my son Alex from daycare and found that he had been left in a dirty diaper for who knows how long. She didn't know how long. She admits it, but she just assumed the worst. Maybe he just took a massive dump. My daughter this morning exploded down there. You would have thought it had been there for 3 weeks, but it just happened. I was upset with the daycare, but more than anything, angry with myself for failing my baby. At the end of my rope, I called my 78-year-old Aunt B, yes, Aunt B, in Oklahoma, and broke down, telling her between the tears that I couldn't make it work and I had to quit my job. Then Aunt B said 11 words that changed my life forever. I can't be there tomorrow, but I can come on Thursday. 2 days later, she arrived at the airport with 7 suitcases and a Pekingese named Buddy and stayed for 16 years. Yes, Aunt B came to the rescue. Aunt, you can't make this up, Aunt B. Moved in with her apparently for 16 years. Now, I don't know why, I'd never had a problem where I would call an aunt and start complaining about it, so maybe she has a really close-knit family down in Oklahoma, but it seems weird to me that on the basis of one phone call, Aunt B would uproot her entire life for the next 16 years. I suspect there's a little bit more to it, because I think, you know, on the other end of the phone, you're like, well, Aunt B, I didn't really want you to, I'm just venting. I don't need you, I don't want you to move here, but suddenly she shows up with 7 suitcases and a dog, and your life is hell after that. But she says that this is what inspired her. She needs it to be a right. She writes, "We must do better by our kids and our parents. In the wealthiest country on the planet, access to affordable and high-quality child care and early education should be a right, not a privilege reserved for the rich." So suddenly, there's a whole new right out there. Who knew there was a new right? Did you know there was a new right? I missed a memo. I'm going to have to reread that pesky Constitution, because there's all these neat, nifty little rights just sort of tucked in there. Normally you think, hey, I read the Constitution and it's actually negative rights. The government is forbidden from doing certain things by the Constitution, by the Bill of Rights. But no, that's not the way liberals read it. They just find it. Oh, look at that, right under there in the preamble. There's another right. I found it. Page 4, down at the bottom. See that weird thing where they did the F-shaped thing, but it was actually 2 S's? Right behind that, a whole new right to child care. These people are nuts. Speaking of nuts, oh, not to be outdone, like I said, the Democratic primary field is a woke-off. And when you don't really have a lot of name recognition and you haven't really been thought of as a liberal media darling and a progressive hero like Elizabeth Warren has, she gets a bit of a pass by most in the media. There are other people out there who are just as woke, but it's just they don't get the credit for being as woke as they are because they haven't really been noted on the national scene, or they're trying to make up for not being woke enough or being woke in the wrong direction, such as the case with New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. She is trying to be the most progressive candidate in a progressive field, but she already starts off at a deficit because, if you remember, Kirsten Gillibrand was the first senator to break with the party and call for Al Franken's resignation because he grabbed the boobs of a sleeping woman on a trip to the Middle East. Yeah, remember that picture? She was the first one. She said, nope, he's got to go. She was trying to cover up for the fact that she had worked for years with Harvey Weinstein as one of his lawyers and was good friends with Harvey Weinstein, so she had to appear super woke back then. But the cost of Al Franken still sticks in the craw of many Democrats. They don't like it. They think he should be in there. He should have gotten a pass. Ah, you know what? She was wearing a flak jacket. Grabbing boob under a flak jacket, that's no big deal. What's everybody does that? So they wanted a pass for Al Franken, and she wouldn't give it to him. And they're mad at her about it. So she has to seem even more woke. She has to be the wokest. Well, yesterday, Kirsten Gillibrand's woke train, the Woke Express, rolled into Iowa, where she did an interview with a local TV news anchor for KCCI. This next clip has not been doctored in any way, shape, or form. You were about to hear a U.S. senator and a presidential candidate for the Democratic Party suggest that the United States government needs to recognize a brand new gender, not just because that they need to. She tries to explain why they need to, why it's important. I apologize in advance for any hurt this causes your brain.
Before her events, I sat down with the senator to talk about a number of topics, including her support for the federal government to recognize a third non-binary gender.
we should allow for anyone who feels that that identifying as a male or female doesn't represent who they are. There's a lot of people who are in a fluid transition, or they may see themselves differently. I think there's a lot of states that have already passed that law because it makes sense for those people. And I don't know why we have to demonize anyone.
There are just some people who just figure there's something else, whatever they are. They don't, you know, there's men who think they're women and women who think they're men, and girls will be boys and boys will be girls. It's a mixed up. I'm not going to do the rest of Lola, but you get the idea. She wants a third gender, an open gender. So what would happen to, say, APBs put out by police? Attention all units, attention all units. Bank robbery suspect walking down the street. We be on the lookout for a biped. Yeah, that's it. We're not allowed to mention any race. We don't know the gender, so we couldn't possibly assume anything on there. You know, some people are short, some people are tall, and giving a height would definitely be some sort of prejudicial thing. You might accidentally stop somebody of an equal height, and that would be wrong as well. So we can't mention anything of that. Hair color, I mean, come on, who's to say what's right and what's wrong? Can you imagine the nightmare that this would be? Today I'm a man. Today, tomorrow I'm a woman. Now I'm going to prison, but I'm this third nebulous gender. And so you better have a bus on standby to move me from the men's prison to the women's prison, depending on what I feel like at a moment's notice. Perhaps I'll serve out my entire sentence on the bus back and forth from the men's women to the women's prison, and you can't tell me otherwise, or else you'll be committing a hate crime. This is how insane the Democratic Party is. Nobody's bullying anybody. Nobody's terrorizing anybody except for these tiny, tiny sliver of human beings in the world. These minorities, the tyranny of the minority. It's like, well, you must all bow to my wishes, and whatever I say I am at any given moment, you must adopt as gospel truth, and should you accidentally let slip the wrong pronoun, my God, the SWAT team will be down here and have you in cuffs before you know what happened. These people are incredible freaks of nature. I'm not talking about the transgender people. I'm talking about the Democratic politicians who sit there and think, well, this is just the way it should be, and you're going to have to deal with it, or else you're guilty of some kind of hate crime. Stop bullying people. You're just mean because you called that woman who's 6'8" with a giant beard wearing a flannel and work boots, you called that woman a man. How dare you? You're worse than Hitler, sir. Oh, God, help us all. We're so screwed if we lose this election. We really are screwed if we lose this election. Oh, boy, howdy. I suppose, though, my favorite story of the day, well, we have one more clip of Kirsten Gillibrand, but I was just reminded of something about Bernie Sanders. They're all just floating around in my head. It's just insane. It's insane. My favorite story of the day is the the story from Politico about Bernie Sanders' pollster. Bernie Sanders' pollster. Somehow this is a story. The headline is Bernie's pollster dishes on the path to beat Trump. The subheadline is critics argue the Democratic Socialist can't possibly win in a general election. His aides counter he could upend the electoral map. The whole story is Bernie's pollster telling you how Bernie could ultimately win. It's basically, you know, what is a pollster going to say? Hey, you're my campaign pollster. What say you? You can't win. We've just started. You can't win. Get out now. All the numbers say it, kid. You don't stand a chance in hell. Get out now while you can. Here, just give me my one check for my one day's worth of work and get out of here while you still have some dignity left, kid. No pollster in the world is going to say, you know what? We don't stand a chance. I guarantee you that Lincoln Chafee's campaign staff said in 2016, you've really got a chance, boss. I really think this is going to go your way. Every campaign that ever lost a race was full of people who were telling them, don't worry, just keep sticking in. Because realistically, at the end of the day, what they're really saying is, don't fold yet. I could use another month's worth of pay. Please do that. But here we are with Bernie Sanders' pollster says he's got a shot. Well, what a novel idea. Wow, stop the press moment right there. Back to Kirsten Gillibrand, because there was one more thing that was a little bit ridiculous. She was not just a little bit ridiculous. It was very ridiculous. She was talking, she was having a little powwow, if you will, with immigration activists. And when you talk about immigration activists, it's, you know, always the open borders crowd. And she was talking to a Native American and decolonizer, whatever the hell that means. Just picture something stupid and square it. And the woman said something that was just so stupid. It was about how you can't have borders because that cuts off the indigenous people from the United States. It's a little bit hard to hear. It's poor quality video and audio. They're in a bar. It's a noisy thing. Doesn't seem like all that many people are super interested in Kirsten Gillibrand being there, but you can make it out enough. It's a very short clip.
And I just want to note that a lot of these people are indigenous to this land, and that border is cutting them off.
I know, that's why the wall is so absurd and hurtful.
Borders are absurd and hurtful because they're cutting off indigenous people from freely entering the United States whenever they want. Indigenous people, frankly, I was born here. I am an indigenous person to this country. Am I now, by this logic, I mean, that's just stupid, but by this stupid logic of the left, which is literally an argument that they're making more and more frequently, you can tell how desperate they're getting, that the dumber their argument gets. They're making an argument that would entitle me to go back to the house I grew up in, knock on the door and say, you must leave this door unlocked for whenever I wish to return. I am indigenous to this home. And if I want to come back here and crash here, you're just going to have to accept that. Doors are mean. Doors are hurtful. Doors should never be locked. We should be able to... That's how stupid this argument is. And that's where identity politics leads. It's because of your skin. It's because of your ethnicity. It's because of things you had absolutely nothing to do with, or something that happened hundreds of years ago to nobody you know. Nobody, anybody knows that you are somehow a victim. This girl isn't a victim talking to Gillibrand, but you would never know it by the way she talks. She's put upon. She's carrying the burden of hundreds of years of oppression that she's never experienced herself. Oh, I'm sure she could probably come up with something in a woke-off, which, you know, they all can. They'll find some way to slight. The police one time talked to me, and I didn't want to talk to the police, and I was scared that they was going to beat me up. No, lady, they left you alone. Lady, you may have, 500 years ago, have a relative, one or two, that were here. So what? So what? You had nothing to do with it. It had no bearing on your life whatsoever. None of this crap about the hundreds of years ago, this was so bad and evil and mean, has anything to do with it. We are not Klingons. We are not responsible for the sins or the glory of our ancestors. None of that is transferable. It's about you and what you do in your life. But if you're a liberal, there is social currency involved in painting yourself up as a victim. And unless, well, if you're a liberal and you paint yourself up in other ways, you could become governor of Virginia or the attorney general of Virginia. It's just a level of insanity that I wouldn't have thought possible. A level of stupidity. These are adults. These are grown adults. Speaking of grown adults and insanity, there's a story up at CNN Style. I saw this tweeted by Soledad O'Brien. She was lamenting that this and Jussie Smollett, this has just ruined Black History Month. This story. This is a fashion story. I just want to point that out at the beginning because there are adult human beings who are upset by this. It's from the UK. It's from London Fashion Week, which should have adults going, well, London isn't the United States. Even if I'm hypersensitive lefty, I would look at it and go, well, that's not the United States. You don't even know what I'm talking about. I'll tell you. The headline is, suicide isn't fashion. Burberry apologizes for hoodie with noose around the neck. If you've ever worn or seen a hoodie, I mean, it's hideous to begin with. It's just ugly. The whole outfit, it's like this fur thing. It looks like somebody gutted a Jawa and stuck an adult inside of it. Just hideous looking, the whole thing. But the drawstrings around the hood are tied in the form of a noose. Or, I don't know, I'm sure there's a better name for it. The story on CNN goes, fashion brand Burberry has apologized for showcasing a hoodie that featured a noose around the neck during its show at London Fashion Week. The retailer said it has removed the item from its collection after criticism from one of its own models led to an online backlash. Quote, we are deeply sorry for the distress caused by one of our products that featured in our A/W, I don't, autumn, winter, maybe, 2019 runway catalog. Marco Gibetti, Burberry's chief executive officer, said in a statement to CNN, though the design was inspired by the marine theme that ran throughout the collection, it was insensitive, and we made a mistake. Now, the design was criticized by somebody named Liz Kelly, who's a model, who cares. She was very upset over suicide. So you've got the suicide. The liberals are upset because this is somehow glorifying suicide by tying a knot in the drawstrings of your hoodie. And then you had the liberals who were upset because this is Black History Month. Soledad O'Brien, this is ruining Black History Month. Can you believe this would happen? This is just the last nail in the coffin of ruining Black History Month. What, did you have to cancel your cake? What are you doing to celebrate it? But I would like to point out, for all the hypersensitive liberals who on social media were whining and complaining and saying this is akin to lynching, especially after the Jussie Smollett incident, where they immediately said, oh, a rope was tied around his neck, noose, just like lynching. Turned out to be a fraud. They were doing the same thing to this. I have to point out, this is the UK. This took place in London. They don't have a history of lynching that our Southern Democratic-controlled states had. They had, in fact, thousands of years worth of hangings long before the United States was even discovered, before this hemisphere was even discovered. So theoretically, couldn't you say that, no, I'm not going to talk about cultural appropriation, I'll just let it slide. But this is the level of insanity that we have reached, that people are upset because either it's suicide or it's racist, that a fashion brand, an overpriced fashion brand, tied the drawstrings on a hoodie in the shape of a noose, which apparently, according to the CEO, it was a nautical theme, and it is a nautical knot. It's a very helpful nautical knot. Most knots are. Somehow it's become a thing, and CNN had to report on it. We are officially, ladies and gentlemen, out of problems if this is something that any human being is bothered by. You have the most blessed life, easiest life in the world, if you care about a snapshot from a London fashion show and somehow project it to make it about you and about whatever your pet cause is at the moment, to make you yourself seem super duper woke. We're out of problems. We need real problems as a society if this is what we're obsessing on. Or we should just all throw a huge party because we've conquered problems as we know them. Still, there are a few people out there with some problems, some well-deserved problems. There are two women that are getting media attention on this side and that side of the pond, one in the UK, one in the US. They ran off to join ISIS. They ran off to join ISIS not to fight. They ran off to essentially be the Joy Division of ISIS, shall we say. They ran off to be ISIS brides. And now that ISIS is being decimated and their caliphate has gone shrunk down to nothing and it's not really working out well for them, they want to go back home. it's a problem for them. I don't, the way the media is portraying this is a bit ridiculous. The headline on ABC News, because they had an exclusive interview, the headline is, Alabama mother begs to return to U.S., saying moving to Syria and marrying ISIS fighter was a, quote, big mistake. Oh, yeah, she's just an Alabama mother. No, she is a terrorist. She called openly on social media to try and recruit people to kill Americans. And now that her third husband is dead, it couldn't happen to a nicer person. She wants to come back to the United States because she fears for her child. These women's children should be taken from them. And they should spend the rest of their lives on a boat in the middle of the ocean that is on fire. So it wouldn't last all that long. They're horrible, horrible people. And they want to say, well, these are just children. This woman was 19 years old when she left Alabama. She didn't sneak away. She left. She flew to Turkey and snuck into Syria because she felt compelled, called to the caliphate. And now that the caliphate has been destroyed, she's now feeling called to come back to the U.S. She will. She's an American citizen. The U.K. situation is a little bit different. They're smart. They stripped citizenship from the woman who went over and became their ISIS war bride. We have some audio from this. Here's the first clip. It's nuts. Prepare yourself.
Tonight, as the ISIS veil is stripped away, this young American mother is pleading to come home.
I realized I made a big mistake, and I know I ruined my future and my son's future, and I'm deeply, deeply regretting.
Hoda Mathana, here with her 18-month son, left Alabama to marry an ISIS fighter 4 years ago. She was just 19.
I love how she was just 19. Well, at 19, she's allowed to vote. At 19, she can join the military. She's a full-blown adult at 19. It isn't like you're an incredibly stupid person until you turn 18 and then, poof, 19. Hey, everybody's smart and you've got the world figured out. I get it. We've all done incredibly stupid things when we were 19 years old. I could write a book about the stupid things I did when I was 19 years old because I grew up in Detroit. So right across the Detroit River, there's legal drinking at the age of 19. Plus, buying booze in Detroit wasn't all that tough. You can carry it to the counter, you can buy it. But all of the stupid things I did when I was 19, I can go through a checklist and say with 100% certainty, none of them involved supporting a terrorist organization. None of them involved giving aid and comfort to murderers. That is the decision that she made. It wasn't made for her. She lived in Alabama. It wasn't as though ISIS came over here and kidnapped her and made her go over there and sleep with a bunch of terrorists. She chose to do that on her own.
She spread ISIS propaganda online, calling for attacks on Americans. Now, she tells The Guardian, after trying to escape, she fears for her safety.
From what I heard, if they were to read my messages, I would have been killed.
Now, that would have saved us all a lot of problems, wouldn't it have? Just a tragedy. She's called for the death of Americans. Now, she wants to go home. Well, because her three husbands are dead, and the caliphate has collapsed. Who wouldn't want to go home, man? You leave a party when the police raid it. Sorry, lady. You made your bed. You gotta lie in it.
Muthanna married three times during her time here. Each time to an ISIS fighter. Each time made a widow.
She's got a bright future ahead of her, doesn't she? She's single, fellas. So, next.
Mathana is not the only woman lured by the terror group. There are 1,500 foreign women and children in this camp alone. 19-year-old Shamima Begum from London is one of them. She just gave birth to her third child, the first two, she claims, dead.
At first it was nice, it was like how they, you know, showed it in the videos.
She described life in the Islamic State, including watching beheadings.
I knew about those things and I was okay with it.
But now she too wants to return home.
I don't want to take care of my child in this camp because I'm afraid he might even die in this camp.
She sounds lovely, doesn't she? She's watched beheadings and she was okay with it. No big deal. But now that her third child could die because of her cavorting with terrorists, now she's rethinking, maybe this isn't exactly the wine and roses I was promised. The good thing is, Unlike the United States, where our idiot terrorist bride is able to come back to the United States, the UK is about to strip this moron of her citizenship.
The British will not bring Begum back. While as an American, Muthanna can expect to be brought home to face justice, President Trump is pushing other countries to follow the US lead.
And here's what our US lead should be. Take their kids, end their lives. Not the kids' lives. You can adopt out the kids. They never need to know how much of mutant evil morons their parents were. Execute the women. They're just as guilty. And adopt the kids out. People are desperate to adopt children in this country and around the world. Just throw them into a home. They're going to be much better off than they were then. And we all move on from ourselves and we forget these evil, evil people. But no, that's not the way it's going to work. There will be interest groups. There will be sympathy. I mean, you can tell from the ABC News report right there, these women were lured. Oh no, they're adults. They made an actual choice. But no. They were lured. They're not the only ones lured by ISIS. Oh, yes. The tweets of the beheadings? Was it the tweet about setting the guy on fire that really got them? You know, I was really against jihad and the entire, you know, murdering people because they're not like me thing. And then I watched them set that Jordanian pilot on fire in the cage while he was alive. And I thought, I gotta have that. The faceless, shapeless dudes under the bed sheets. I knew that I had found my dream man. And so I decided to pack up and move to Turkey so I could sneak over to Syria. Now, I'm sorry. You should fall several times into a wood chipper. You deserve it. You deserve worse. Rot in hell. Stay away. But you don't stay away. Well, you can go away now until tomorrow. That's all the time we have for today. Appreciate you listening, and sorry for my stuffed up nasally thing. I'm hoping that this is rounding the corner. It seems like it might be, so we'll know more tomorrow. Email the show, Derek@dailycaller.com. Share, tell a friend. I appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You know, it's funny. Sometimes American journalists talk about how bad a country is because people are lining up for food. That's a good thing. In other countries, people don't line up for food. The rich get the food and the poor starve to death.